great to be speaking with y'all again on this platform. And if we could start with just brief introductions for those who may not be familiar with you or your work, maybe starting with Sophia.
Yes, so thank you, Tag, for having us on the show. Really quickly, who am I? Okay, so my name is Sophia Williams, and I am a member of the campaign to bring Mumia home, and I also like to classify myself as a radical activist in the making. And I've just, you know, been with the campaign for about 6 years almost now, and I've been able to see how deep our society is in these different issues that I have ignored or haven't been aware of this for many years. So I'm blessed to be a part of a work like this. I'm blessed to be in conversations or interviews with comrades like both of you and many others in working towards a freer society where we can live as human beings. Thank you.
Oh, that's me now?
Please.
Yeah, so my name is Kevin Steele. I'm a member of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, as well as the Campaign for Mumia. I don't like to call myself an activism, because I feel like the activism word just puts you in a box. So I'd rather be more of a, I'm just an organizer and person, one that's fighting for liberation. And whether that's through the specific organizations that I mentioned or through film and journalism outside of the organization. And I've done numerous mental health videos and police brutality, shedding light on police brutality videos and things of that nature. So I feel we as a people could bring more light and more, it would be easier for us to use our talent to bring more light to the injustice that's going on in this nation and throughout the world. And I'm using film and photography to shed light on the injustice that's happening. And that's who I am.
Respect to you both. And ideally, we'll get a second to kind of loop back around to this question of identifiers, you know, terms like activist and others. You know, there's of course, a politic to all of that, and it's an important issue. But just to keep it in the more general to start out with, I'm wondering if y'all could just share as concisely as you can, what are the main issues and contemporary concerns that you are focusing on right now, whether that be in the news cycle or just out here in the community? What are some of the main concerns, issues, stories that y'all are facing at present in this exact moment today? If you could start us off with that, Sophia.
Okay, great. Thank you. And great response, Kevin. That was amazing to hear. To your question, Tag, in terms of the main issues or the contemporary issues that is being observed and experienced in today's society, on my part, there's so many. For me right now, when he asks that question, the first thing I just think about is the everyday struggle that one is in. When you think about the fact that when you listen to the news, it's as if it's clear that what is being reported on the news is completely unrelated to people's everyday issues. It's all about the powers that be. And for one, people are out here struggling to find jobs, struggling to live a decent human being, struggling to eat, struggling to have proper health care. And those are the combinations of those different injustices that are being asked for is what I see in the news being neglected and also being talked about in a way as if we don't have a right to those things. Then one of the things that continues to plague the mainstream news media and the thing that bugs me the most is someone who used to be an undocumented immigrant for a number of years is the issue around immigration and these deportation moves on the part of this person in office and how it just seems as if it's clear that people who don't look of a certain way or don't look or maybe have what he and others like him think are typical Americans do not belong here. So those are just one of the major issues when it comes down to race and the disparity amongst those that I'm bothered by, where people are being separated and treated as if they are not important, they are not seen. But it all comes down to everyday people, people out here, the oppressed, wanting to get by in a way that is decent and humanizing, and that's a struggle day in, day out.
No question, that everyday struggle. And as you say, it's completely interconnected. So fully appreciate that. Would you like to weigh in on that same question, Kevin?
Yeah, briefly, that Sophia was speaking on, like, the president and a few things that it clicked on to me. I had a conversation recently with one of my friends, and we were speaking on the government shutdown and how actually because of immigration, basically, this is his thesis on why is he building a wall to keep immigrants from coming in, invading the country or whatever. And by him doing this, him stopping all the federal grants, the different social programs that was like shut out to the community, we was having a conversation because this lady from my neighborhood, she was saying how if EBT stopped, there would be mayhem inside the inner cities. And it made sense. What she was saying, she was drunk maybe, but it made so much sense to me because this could actually lead to some type of civil war because people that's from the poor communities, this is how they live. This is how they survive. They survive off these programs. They survive off Section 8. They survive off all these different government-funded programs. So without them, you're forcing regular law-abiding citizens to either get evicted because the landlord still has to get paid. They're not trying to hear that you can't pay because the government shut down your funds. So you're either going to force them into the street as a homeless person, or you're forcing like the teenagers into the street life because they have to figure out how to continue to survive for their family because their mother and father is not going to go do the street life type of activities. But the teenager that sees all the street life activities around them 24/7 on their corner block, now they know that's a weird meme. Because those individuals that's living that type of lifestyle are not affected by this government shutdown because they're not being funded by these things. So this is gonna backfire so bad, and it's gonna hit the poor community so hard, where the mass incarceration, I believe, is gonna skyrocket because more people is gonna commit crimes because they need to eat still. So it's just so crazy how the basic human needs as food, water, shelter. But it's crazy. It blows my mind that the main necessities are being put by having a price tag on it. Things that's naturally free shouldn't have a price tag on it. Things like water shouldn't have a price tag on it. But somehow these people find a way to marginalize and corporatize water. So now we buying water, and they find a way. In from like my research that the water is dirty. New York, New Jersey has like the worst water. So now you are forced to buy water. It's madness that the basic human needs are being neglected. And it's being neglected from the highest seat in the nation, and that's the president. So it's so much work. It's so much work out here that we need to do. When Sophia was speaking, that was the only thing that was running through my mind. That's just the human rights is being mishandled and mistreated, like as if we have a 5-year-old handling our human rights.
Thank you all for, as I expected, would be these very, very thorough responses, and they completely interact with each other. And so I know, Sophia, that you had a time constraint, so I'm going to try and keep that in mind. But I'm reminded from what y'all are both saying, especially as regards this wall and the connection to prison slavery, I'm reminded there's a broadcast on this network, Tando Radio Show, during which it's been stated that this proposed wall would likely be, if it were to be built, in fact, would likely be much more to keep those of us that are on this particular landmass inside of this this corporate U.S. structure than it would to keep anyone out. And it's a compelling thought. And I think that it, you know, connects very well with this notion of prison plantations themselves and heads behind the wall, you know, and the fact that these walls are utilized not only to oppress and repress individuals, but also to make it so that the struggles and the plight of those individuals are not able to reach those of us that are outside of the walls as readily. And so the constant repression and suppression of communications, especially between those of us out here and those on the inside. So one question I wanted to raise with you both before we get into any further nuances of kind of the general political space is what's good with your organizing at present? As far as the campaign to bring Mumia home, for example, Sophia, what are some recent developments or updates coming out of that particular struggle that you would want to share with those that might could end up peeping out this installment of pre-intercoms?
Yeah, so definitely. So in the campaign to bring Mumia home, and most importantly, in the larger struggle, the larger movement around Mumia's freedom, we have recently heard of great news, new developments for Mumia's legal case. And this came down about the 27th, I believe, of December, late last year, where a judge ruled in Pennsylvania that Mumia's previous denied appeals can now be re-argued. And just a quick backstory, to the best of my ability at this moment, we've been in the courtroom on Mumia's legal case from about middle or so of, or a little bit prior to the middle of 2017, essentially bringing forth the case that one of the major DAs at the time during Mumia's case, that's Castile, Ronald Castile, proved to be biased as he ruled in Mumia's case as a DA prosecutor, but then when he was elected to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, he also oversaw Mumia's post-conviction section of his case. And so that was proved to be unconstitutional. It was proved to be biased. Another case, Williams versus Pennsylvania, set that precedent for Mumia's case and many others that are similar. Essentially, we went back and forth about 7 or 8 times, I believe, in the courts of Philadelphia with the same Judge Leon Tucker, who was overseeing this, and he essentially ruled again at the end of last year that Mumia's prior denied appeals can now be re-argued. And again, those appeals were oversaw, a number of them years ago at the time, by D.A. Castile. So we're in a new moment for Mumia, more of a victorious moment, because Mumia, people should know that Mumia hasn't been able to be in the courtroom around his legal case for some time now, for so long. And for us to have had this opportunity, or for him to have had this opportunity to get back in the courtroom and won, is really exceptional. That alone is a victory, and we know that this moment is not an overnight moment. It came from the very beginning of people on the ground struggling to free Mumia, and this was not a favor that the courts just woke up one day and decided to do us a favor. This essentially has been a 37 or 38 years of struggle for his freedom. And all that we have done in those many years somehow have led us to this moment, a moment that came by again that was a precedent from another case. So we know that this is a crucial moment. This is what has been called or dubbed the last lap, the last go-around. The fact is that we know that in this new moment is very crucial. The fact is, it's not an overnight moment. We have to get back into the courts and now win this final struggle. Hopefully, this will lead to him having a whole new trial altogether and, of course, leading to Mumia walking out of those prison doors. So that's really the new development. We are also demanding the District Attorney of Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, to demand him to follow the judge's order and do not appeal what the judge has ordered. And essentially, there is a petition, I believe it's actionnetwork.com, that's going around for people to sign and get his way. Because we also understand that as much as we are fighting on the ground, we still have to put serious pressure on the powers that be in this moment. And right now, we have, I think, until Friday or Saturday for D.A. Krasner to come back with some kind of a decision. And, you know, no matter what that decision is, we continue to stand by Mumia's innocence and Mumia's freedom. And so that's really where we're at now. I hope I captured everything really quickly in this moment.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to build on the question of this moment in the Mumia struggle for sure. And if nothing else, we can do a follow up because I know the minutes are pressing against this. But you had mentioned about his absence in the courts, and I just was wondering if you could real quick help those who perhaps have never been at a Mumia hearing, or maybe they've never been at any hearing in court. If you could just, as someone who has been in those courts and outside of those courts at demonstrations, could you just share what that's like and the particulars of this now, it was a good 2 years, right, of legal back and forth around this Williams issue in the courts?
Yeah, so essentially, what has it been like inside the courtroom? I mean, it's been really interesting in many ways. And I say that because we have the movement, Mumia, his family, we have all been somehow targeted and targeted by the Fraternal Order of Police, the FOP, and that of Marie Faulkner, who is the widow of Danielle Faulkner. And again, for people who may not know, Danielle Faulkner is the police officer that was killed, and that's the police officer that Mumia has been wrongfully accused of killing. And so just quickly again, back to the courtroom look, it's really interesting each and every time we have been in this new moment of Mumia's legal case, because it begins to look like an attack mob inside the courtroom in the lobbies. We go in with a decent crowd size of supporters from New York, New Jersey, and of course Philadelphia and even DC and other areas, and we go in doing what we are required to do to get in, and we wait patiently. But each time we have been targeted and just, I have to say, attacked by the FOP and Maureen, and I guess you could call it her gang of the FOP. They take over when they also come to the courtroom. They essentially get front row seats. They don't have to wait the way we do. They get to go in and they somehow go through some secret back door, what have you. And when we arrive in the courtroom, they're taking up, I would say, 2/3 of it. And so we're sitting at the back of the, I was going to say the back of the bus. We're sitting at the back
of
the courtroom.
It is the back of the bus.
like it was back in the Jim Crow days or what have you, sitting at the back of the bus. And it's just ridiculous and sickening to see each time what they do. When Mumia, for example, and I don't mean to go long on this, but this is a very good question. When Mumia was on death's door with Hep C, and we went to court fighting for him to get the right medical treatment, none of them were there. It was just us. And that was a larger courtroom. None of them were there, not even the news media, because I suspect that they felt that this is it. These are his last days, and there's no coming back. Now that we have, or now that they were aware, or they seem to have gotten a sense that we are actually, this could lead to Mumia's freedom. This could lead to something opening up for him. They are now all of a sudden reappearing out of the woodwork and coming in as like mobs. And that's really interesting to note what it looks like inside, because at the end of the day, the majority of them, almost every single one of them, are white. And we have a very diverse movement of different nationalities, and we come with, you know, all due respect in solidarity, and we are essentially treated as less than, as others, and pushed to the back. So it has been very absurd. There have been close moments where they have said things to us or made remarks that were just, you know, unethical. And, you know, it's been one of those things where we essentially have to go in a little bit wondering, like, what would this court date be? What would it look like? And also wondering what, you know, what are they cooking up now behind the scenes? And again, you know, we've been, in terms of what's happening in the courtroom, more so on the legal specifics, we have been in the courtroom, and each and every time the other side, the DA, says, well, we can't find the files. We don't know where the files are for Mumia. And there are how many boxes, and we can't find anything. And that has always been a running thing. I know at one point the judge had narrowed it down to, well, we need, where is a document, or where is documents that show a direct and personal involvement by Judge Castile. I know he had condensed it down to just searching for that one document, and still nothing has been found. But lo and behold, the day after the judge made his decision, which was a huge win for us, lo and behold, there were files found, about 6 or so files found, mismatched. They are like 1 of 29, 6 of 29. They're just all over the place. And the funny thing is, it was found the day after the judge ruled, and it was found in a very peculiar place. People in the DA's office went searching for furniture. Went searching in a storage room for furniture, and they happened to find a few boxes of Mumia's files. So I think all of these things just point to the larger picture that Mumia is innocent. We've been saying it for since time immemorial, we know this, and they are trying to, I feel, guard themselves, protect themselves from what is about to come down. And in this moment, it's extremely crucial, important that we stay strong in this fight, because it's usually the last moments like these that seem to be the hardest. It's the storm, like, it's these stormy days that we're going to have to endure a bit more of before the brighter days come about. And that bright day of seeing Mumia walk out those prison doors is coming.
Absolutely it is. And great looks for just sharing those insights and helping us to get, you know, that much closer to those courtrooms. I mean, unethical is just one of those terms that just really aptly describes these slave patrollers out here, and especially their cartels and criminal organizations like the FOP. Kevin, I'm wondering if you can share with us some of the more recent developments organizing-wise on your end. I know that that includes what we were just discussing around Mumia. If you want to build on any of that discussion, by all means, but I also know that you've been working on film projects and you had a basketball tournament / fundraiser recently. So anything that you want to highlight that you have been focusing on organizing-wise of late, and if you want to elaborate on the Mumia question, by all means.
Okay, well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I won't be long. I do want to mention Mumia's case. I've been privileged enough to be at the court date, a few of them. To backtrack a little bit on who I am, I was incarcerated for, I was sentenced to 10 years and as an adult. And then through the years of my time incarcerated, I got an appeal. I was 17 years old, and that was my first time being arrested. The judge, which now she's on the TV, she has her own TV show. She's also the judge, Dominguez. She's also the judge that sentenced Khalif Browder, for everyone that knows the Khalif Browder case. So this judge is just, she was one that was, she didn't care about the evidence. She was just looking for conviction. So that, to put that in perspective. So I was given an unfair trial. I didn't know any better. It's my first time being arrested, and I was sentenced for 10 years. Throughout the time, I found out that they wasn't supposed to sentence me as an adult. They were supposed to sentence me as a juvenile. So they resentenced me to 5 years, but I ended up doing 8 anyway. I've been back and forth through court, and I understand it from the inside, from a person that's actually in shackles. So for me to be a spectator going into the courtroom, and for someone such of a caliber as Mumia, it was so surreal that it was so much of a circus, I wanted to say, that it would be, we would arrive there. 9 times out of 10, every time I went, we arrived first to the courthouse. And it would be masses of us. There would be people outside demonstrating for Mumia. And then it would be us inside, actually trying to get inside the courtroom and hear the case. Maureen Faulkner and her bodyguard, it would probably be 10, 15, maybe the most. And it would be massive of us. They will walk in, skip ahead of us, going through some secret compartment door, whatever, and they'll be sitting in there. At one point, at one court date, Maureen had this crazy outburst, and it just blows my mind at the privileges that they showed them, and it was so crazy to just to see this. So I can imagine what Mumia is going through. Because I know he's not at the court appearances, but I know when the court date comes up and it gets adjourned. I went through that for 6 years. I was fighting my case. I can imagine what this is like, how much of a burden this is on him. by constantly hearing this, adjourn, oh, this is coming up. This. So it's so, this case is so much of a mess. It's actually, it's heartbreaking that to sit there, for me to keep going through it, but I know it's even worse for her to go through it. So I just wanted to mention that because the court case, the courtroom is ridiculous. My organizing when I'm out here. So right now I'm doing a mental health series. I mean, not mental health. I'm doing that also, but that's based off real events that I rewrote, and I'm telling a story through that. But as of now, I'm working on a gun violence series, and I'm partnering with Netflix, and we're talking to different families that have lost ones through gun violence, and we're gonna talk to those that actually did the shooting in these gun violence crimes. So that's going pretty well. We spoke with Tamila, I forgot her real name, but she was a high school basketball player in Harlem. Her nickname was Chicken. She died around 2012. She was killed inside Douglas Project in Harlem. We're talking to her father, and we're going to do a collaboration with the nonprofit GMAC. I really can't remember what the abbreviation is. It's a gun violence program in Brooklyn. We're going to collab with them on a few episodes. So that's hopefully with that, that'll go well. And this will bring more attention because most gun violence videos I've seen, it really just speaks on the victim and it never really gives both sides of the story. So I felt that does the victim no justice because all this ties into mental health and I'm big on that. So not only does the victim's family is going through this trauma with the person, but the person inside prison as well is going through some type of mental health. I'm not no doctor, so I can't diagnose them. We're gonna also get a doctor to help us with the cases. So, but I want to be able to tell both sides of the story and get an understanding of why is this epidemic going on in our cities. That's one thing we're doing. And with IWOC, we have a Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee. We have a welcome home party for it's Bronx 120 up there, uptown in the Bronx. They're having a party coming up soon. I can't really speak on that because I've been a little distant, but I know that's coming up soon. I'll be able to get into it more in the near future. And with my fundraiser, this was the third annual that we've done it. We're going to have another one in March. We just haven't picked a date yet. And this is so dope. One of the founder of the fundraiser, it's called the Give Back. His name is T. Marcus. He's a sneaker collector. And he works with Nike and a few other companies that sponsored him. So this go around, we actually got Body Armor, the drink. And we got Nike to sponsor the tournament, the basketball tournament that we've done. And Kyrie Irving donated 100 pair of sneakers. And Kimber Walker donated 50 pair of sneakers. It was amazing. The turnout was amazing because on that specific day it rained. So I didn't think a lot of people would come out, but the turnout was amazing. We raised a few money. Sophia actually donated, and we appreciated you for that. So it was actually an amazing event. And it's something that we want to give back. When I was growing up, we didn't have these outlets. When I was, the community center been closed since I was about 8. So we didn't have these different outlets and these type of people to help us and give back to where they came from. So it's something that I'm passionate about, to help, to give back to the people that look like me, first of all, and that's came from the same environment that I come from. Yeah, and those are the main things right now. I have a bunch of stuff. My mind is so boggled right now. So it's hard for me to actually pinpoint the things that I'm actually doing, but I'm working, so I have a few things going on.